From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. This hour, we examine the monumental changes passed by Congress on the health care and financial fronts and what they mean for us in Iowa. First, a conversation with Joanne Lamphere of the AARP. She's in Iowa to discuss the implementation of the health care overhaul. Then in our second half hour, we get one view on the changes to financial regulation that are coming. The president and CEO of the Iowa Bankers Association, John Sorensen, will join us to discuss his concerns about the new regulations. How will changes to health care and the world of finance affect you? Our discussion starts right after this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. So glad to have you with us over the noon hour. Tomorrow, President Obama signs into law sweeping financial industry regulations that passed Congress last week. And in the second half hour of our program today, we'll get one view on those new regulations from the president and CEO of the Iowa Bankers Association, John Sorensen. But first, this half hour, we want to take a look at another major overhaul that was signed into law earlier this year, the monumental changes to our health care system. Joining us to discuss this, Joanne Lamphere. She is the director of State Government Relations, Health and Long-Term Care for the American Association of Retired Persons, the AARP. Welcome to you, Joanne Lamphere.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're in Iowa to discuss the implementation of the health care overhaul. Who have you been speaking to?
Today, a fantastic group of about 100 health professionals are gathered here. It's the Iowa Health Reform Symposium. They're health care executives, they're policymakers, they're academic researchers to learn more about the health care law and what it means for Iowa. I participated on a panel earlier today, and tomorrow we'll be speaking before the Iowa Healthcare Coverage Commission.
Mm-hmm. What is the AARP's mission here? What are you coming with as far as messages for Iowans in regards to this new healthcare overhaul?
AARP worked very hard to help get the healthcare law enacted, and our highest priority right now is to go around the state, around the whole country, to help educate people about the benefits of this new law. Thankfully, much of the public acrimony has quieted down, and as people learn more about what's in the law, they get pretty excited about some of these benefits.
Of course, we all remember that acrimonious debate that lasted well over a year about health care and a lot of debating there. So what have presented the greatest challenges to you when you speak to people? Do they still sound like they're in the politics mode and not the, well, we're done with that debate and this is what we have?
Well, our highest priority is to just speak with folks and educate them, because as people learn more, they get more excited about the possibilities in terms of what it means for affordable, guaranteed coverage for everybody, as well as making improvements in the healthcare delivery system.
Okay. Be specific. Tell us about the immediate benefits of this new law for retired people and perhaps for others as well.
Well, speak for folks in general. Immediately in 2010, there are going to be tax credits for small businesses, and over 51,000 small businesses in Iowa could be helped, making it easier to provide coverage to workers. Adult children on parents' plans can stay. Adult children can stay until they're 26. And if anyone has children in college or being launched, this can give tremendous peace of mind. And we estimate maybe 8,000 young adults could be affected. There's no coverage denials for children. That means children who have serious medical conditions can no longer be denied health insurance. Plans are going to be required to provide preventive care at no cost. There will be no more annual or lifetime limits on health insurance. And that will help about 1.7 million Iowa residents who won't have to worry anymore if their coverage runs out, if they get sick. There won't be any more rescissions. Insurers won't be able to drop people's coverage when they have major health conditions. And finally, there's the important rebate for seniors in the so-called donut hole. And last year, about 43,000 Iowa seniors fell into the donut hole, and they'll be getting a $250 check this year.
I want to come back to the donut hole and some other aspects that you just mentioned, but when you step back, you work in Washington, so you have a grasp on not only Iowa, but as Iowa compares to other states. What position does this put Iowa? What does Iowa find itself in regards to these changes compared to other states?
Iowa is well poised to take full advantage of these federal changes, in large part because Iowa has a history of bipartisan leadership. And this leadership and this trust that has been built over many years it provides a terrific underpinning.
Why does that make a difference?
Because you have leadership.
Bipartisan leadership.
Well, if you have bipartisan leadership, mm-hmm. you know that you will stand in someone else's shoes, see how the world looks to them, and forge an agreement that works across the aisle. AERP is quite committed to working in a bipartisan way. And we think better legislation is enacted and regulations as a result.
Are there any common misconceptions you're running into about the coming health care changes that you are eager to correct?
People are afraid. They're afraid, and once they learn more,
afraid of what? Afraid of what specifically?
They're afraid of change. They're afraid of losing what they have in a time of change. They're afraid of escalating cost increases. They're afraid that their employers might stop providing coverage. Mm-hmm. They're just afraid. The law is very complicated. It has taken even the experts a great deal of time to figure out what exactly it means. There's uncertainty. There's regulations still haven't been developed. So there's uncertainty. And when there's uncertainty and change, people are cautious.
Okay. We want to reach out to our listeners to find out if they have any specific questions, reservations, concerns about the coming health care overhaul. We'd like to ask you to join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter @IPRTalk. Tell us your hopes and fears for the health care changes that are coming into effect in the next few years. Tell us about the one of the first elements of the new health care reform law, a new insurance plan made available aimed at covering people who haven't been able to get insurance because of pre-existing illness. Tell us more about who in Iowa this change may affect and how.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. This is a transitional high-risk pool for individuals who, because of their medical condition, have been unable to get insurance. You know, in this country, up until the law was passed, insurers voluntarily offer coverage. And so some people with medical conditions like cancer couldn't get insurance at any price. People would find themselves in this situation if they got downsized from a job or their spouse died or aged into Medicare. And it was a pretty scary situation. The law provides $5 billion over the next few years across the United States to offer coverage to those who have been uninsured, who have pre-existing conditions. And I think Iowa stands to gain about $34 million with this law. It's transitional. It's temporary. It's meant to fill in an immediate gap.
Until 2014, when what happens?
When the new exchanges will be fully implemented. The exchanges are intended to change the healthcare marketplace. People will be buying insurance through an exchange, and it's anticipated that there will be quality standards and value standards and serious cost negotiation to make more affordable coverage possible for individuals and small businesses.
So describe the person who might be interested in getting into one of these high-risk, what they're called high-risk insurance pools. Someone listening right now who doesn't have insurance, who has been denied coverage, who thinks they may qualify for this temporary insurance pool. Who are they and what should they do if they find themselves in this category?
There are several thousand, and it might be over 30,000 folks who potentially would be eligible for coverage through the Iowa Comprehensive Health Association. Deductibles may be high, and they haven't figured out what the exact premiums will be. Mm-hmm. But folks should call this association and get more information.
We're assuming, though, that the cost of this high-risk insurance is going to be more than an average insurance policy, but something that someone could pay.
Well, yeah, because if you have very serious medical conditions, buying insurance is exactly what you'd want to do to provide peace of mind.
Okay, if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100 or the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Joanne Lamphere of the AARP is with us from Washington. She's in Iowa, as a matter of fact, for a couple symposiums. Max is joining us from Windsor Heights. Hi, Max.
Hi. Yes. My concern is it sounds wonderful that the federal government has unlimited resources to give us all of these benefits. The concern I have is, what about the federal budget? This is very expensive. The other thing is, I typically have worked part-time and probably make too much money to get subsidized for my insurance. I'm wondering how much insurance is going to cost me, because it sounds like it's going to be much more expensive with the restrictions on the insurance companies to deny coverage and so forth. And
Max, we're coming up to a break. I'm going to let Joanne answer those two questions, and we'll see where
yes.
we go from there. Thank you, Max.
Okay.
You're quite right in pointing out that the federal government and the state government and families and businesses don't have unlimited resources. And that's why it's very important as we move forward to make careful, cost-effective decisions in the state. The money is already in the system. It's just being spent in very, very inefficient, bad ways. Oftentimes, people are getting health care that they don't need or that has no proven medical value. Oftentimes, your health insurance includes really a hidden tax, because you're paying for all the people who don't have health insurance. There are uncompensated care pools of hundreds of millions of dollars that the state and federal government are now supporting for people who don't have coverage. So the money's in the system. We're just trying to spend it in a better way.
Okay, Max, if you're still there from Windsor Heights, hang on. We've got to take a short break, and we want to address that other question. If you have a question or a comment, concern, or a hope about the health care overhaul that is taking place, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. The exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're on Twitter at IPR Talk. We'll be back with Joanne Lamphere in just a moment. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about the changes passed by Congress and signed into law on the health care front, and also later on the financial front in about 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes. We'll be talking about that. This hour, this half hour, we're talking about health care with Joanne Lamphere of the AARP. She's come to Iowa to be part of a symposium, one of the things, and also to educate Iowans about the changes coming to health care. 1-866-780-9100 if you'd like to join our conversation, or the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Max, are you still there from Windsor Heights? Max is not there. We wanted to get Max an answer to his question. He had a question concerning subsidized health insurance. Can you answer that, Joanne?
Max asked an important question about who's going to pay for all these extra protections that consumers will have now that insurance will be regulated differently. One of the benefits of this law is that healthier people will be coming into the insurance pool. Right now, you have only people who are sick or who feel they need insurance or they need security that are buying health insurance. But under this new law, everybody, all Americans, will be expected to have health insurance coverage. healthy, sick, and that should help to drive down premiums. He also asked a question about would he be able to qualify for any of the subsidies. And it's estimated that if you live in a family of four and you're making $88,000 or less, you probably would qualify for the subsidy and you'd be able to get help with your premium costs through the exchange.
Sally emailed us from Ames. She's writing, I'm under 26, getting married in September, and my fiance's health insurance does not cover spouses. Will I still be covered under my parents' plan? 26, isn't that the cutoff age to be cut?
Yeah, I'm doubtful. Sure. It's doubtful. I think by the time you're getting married,
you have to be looking after your own health insurance and getting out from the umbrella of your parents. Let's talk about the donut hole that you mentioned before, Medicare Part D, this coverage gap commonly referred to as the donut hole. What is included in this law to address the problem of the donut hole?
When the Medicare Part D program was designed several years ago, for cost reasons, people received coverage to cover their immediate prescription drug costs as well as catastrophic prescription drug costs. But for in the middle, if you just used prescription drugs, you'd fall into this donut hole and you would then have to be paying out of pocket. So you were paying both a premium and then getting no benefit for that. And one of AARP's top priorities in working on health reform was to close this donut hole gap. And this year we'll be having and checks have already begun to be sent out from the federal government to people who find themselves in the donut hole. And over time, this coverage gap is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Just over 5 minutes left with Joanne Lamphere of the AARP. Let's go to Charlotte in Charles City. Charlotte, welcome to our program.
Thank you. One of the things that I haven't heard mentioned too often is when people question whether we're going to have any savings because we're insuring additional people now and maybe low income, they'd have to be subsidized. A point that needs to be made is we are already paying for the care of these low-income people, but we're paying the full bill of the surgery or the doctor's office visit or whatever. Now we'll be paying the premiums for the insurance, which has got to be substantially less than paying for the full amount of the surgeries or whatever procedure they may have had. And the other point, my only qualms about the bill is the cost of the premiums, and I know that there's a theory that because we're insuring healthy people now, the premiums will come down. But really, that's at the discretion of the insurance companies, and I don't have a lot of faith in a company giving money back. I think I can just see them pocketing the additional premiums. And we're still not going to have any control of the costs. Hmm. So that's one of my concerns. But other than that, I'm really thrilled with the new bill. I have a brother who's type 2 diabetic, and he can now maybe get some insurance.
Great, Charlotte. Let's see if we can have your concern addressed by Joanne.
All right.
You made an important point about savings that will come as a result of this law. And I appreciate your comment. It shows that you've been reading a lot.
Joanne, Iowa, like many states, is urging Congress to help states that are struggling with the high cost of health care by extending funding for Medicaid programs. The enhanced federal medical assistance percentages for Medicaid is part of an economic stimulus package that will run out next December. Talk about that and how that helps states who are struggling in the economy.
Medicaid is a federal-state partnership where the federal government sets overall rules and the state decides the scope of benefits, how they're going to pay providers, and so forth. And depending on the resources and wealth in a state, the federal government provides different levels of matching funds to provide support for the Medicaid program. Because of the terrible economic situation, as part of the stimulus, the federal government decided to increase what they call the FMAP, the federal matching rate, to all the states. And that is scheduled to run out at the end of December. It is still being considered in this congressional session, maybe before they leave, but it is uncertain about whether that FMAP will be continued. But I do want to say, as part of the federal law, not the stimulus funding, but as part of the federal law, the federal government will be offering many, many incentives to expand coverage for individuals and provide home and community-based services through the Medicaid program with additional federal matching funds.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand the overhaul provides some funds to some states to promote independent living by expanding home and community-based services. Is Iowa one of those states?
Yes, it can be. One of the great surprises in the health reform law is the realization that there are many elements to expand incentives to build and improve home and community-based services.
Mm-hmm.
It should come as no surprise to anyone who has parents or grandparents. People want to live at home. They want to live at home independently as long as possible. But right now we have a skewed system where our older relatives who dearly want to be independent are often sent away to nursing homes, much against their will. Yet it doesn't have to be that way. Medicaid does provide – there are programs and services to help people stay independent, stay at home. Unfortunately, they are only – they've only been – they're only limited in scope. And so as a result of this law, there's funding and programmatic incentives to expand some of these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And Iowa would be able to take advantage of this. There would be some conditions.
On balance, then, is it what you're saying that if we had more elderly people in their homes rather than going to other places, if they stayed in their homes, if they wished this, would we on balance be saving money in Iowa, in our national economy, to keep people in their homes and get the health care they need delivered there?
There's no question that that's true. Reputable health services research has documented time and time again the cost effectiveness of providing care in the home compared to nursing homes.
We have just about a minute or so left. I understand the overhaul also makes it easier, you mentioned nursing homes, to file complaints about the quality of care in nursing homes. How does it do that?
And it's also the law provides more transparency so that states need to have information up on their websites about quality information so consumers can make better choices. Another part of the long-term care supports is the prohibition against spousal impoverishment, meaning that you can keep a loved one at home and not have to become impoverished as a result of taking on that responsibility.
Now, in our next segment of our program, we're going to be talking about the effect of the sweeping financial industry regulations that Congress passed last week, that President Obama will sign into law tomorrow. Do you see any direct implications in the financial industry regulations that are coming for healthcare and AARP, as far as you're concerned?
There are implications. AARP has been very worried in the financial services industry about people who represent themselves as financial planners, but it's really uncertain. Are they? The new financial protections will provide a light towards protecting consumers in ways they never have been protected before. And that attention to consumers, I think, will spill over and there will be greater state and national focus on the importance of protecting consumers.
Thank you very much, Joanne Lamphere of the AARP. Thank you for joining us and coming into our studio. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act with the president of the Iowa Bankers Association, John Sorensen. That's when we return on The Exchange after a short break. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. So glad to have you with us over the noon hour. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this is The Exchange. Tomorrow, President Obama will sign into law the biggest rewrite of the financial regulatory system since the Great Depression, the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Under its provisions, regulators would form a council with the power to impose extra restrictions on giant financial firms as well as banks. It could also direct the FDIC to dissolve a financial company, threatening the entire system with its failure. And lastly, it seeks to add an all-new regulator housed under the Federal Reserve, focused on consumer loans, loans all the way from credit cards to mortgages. Joining us now with his view on the sweeping new regulations to come, the president and CEO of the Iowa Bankers Association, John Sorensen, joins us by phone. Good afternoon to you, John.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Summarize the changes you see the law bringing to Iowa's banks and whether you think these changes are good or bad for Iowa's banks.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that Iowa banks were focused on meeting the credit needs of their communities both before and during, and they will do so after the financial crisis has come and gone, Ben. And you know, what we're looking at now is the policy response to that crisis, and there are portions of regulatory reform that we as an industry have supported. We think it's important to protect the taxpayers by eliminating the too big to fail doctrine so that no financial institution is in a position where, because they threaten the systemic economy, our economy to such a large degree, that it requires a bailout. We don't think that scenario should exist, and part of this bill would put in place a mechanism not only to provide greater regulation of institutions that pose that threat, but at the same time also provides a resolution mechanism to address that would hold the taxpayers harmless.
So on that point, you say that's a win. That's something that's corrected with this new law.
That's correct. They've got a long ways to addressing the too big to fail doctrine and trying to improve that. In addition, one thing we've been very vocal about is that most of the lending that kind of drove the subprime mortgage lending crisis came from outside the regulated banking industry. Many of them did not have adequate regulation, did not have to follow the same rules and regulations that our community banks and other banks did, and again, this bill would take a step in that direction. Ben, I think you also know that most Iowa banks are basically community-owned small businesses. Mm-hmm. And the reason we have a big concern about this particular bill is because this adds another layer of regulation on top of what already exists for our community banks for them to deal with. It adds about 250 new, there will be 250 new regulatory pronouncements that banks are going to have to deal with. They're going to have to understand how to comply. They're going to have to direct staff resources towards meeting these new regulations. And that can be very costly and time-consuming, especially for our smaller institutions that would much rather use that time focused on their customers.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, as you mentioned, it does put in place a new regulator, again, focused on consumers, but this regulator will have unprecedented authority to direct banks on what kind of services they can provide and how they can provide them. And the scary part about that from a community bank standpoint is that they can do so with little regard to the health of the financial institution. And we all know in Iowa that the health of our financial institutions are critical to our ability to create economic growth in our communities.
What are the changes you see coming to some of these other forms of credit, the debit card fees, for example? Let's talk about debit cards and credit cards, something that almost all consumers do have these days.
No, that's correct. And one of the things that this bill does, which, again, we think is another example of maybe where Congress has overreached and it goes outside of really addressing the financial crisis, is for the first time they put in place controls on pricing on what banks, financial institutions, can charge their retail customers for processing credit and debit transactions. And as a consumer, you might think, well, how does that affect me? We've seen this in other countries where these controls have been put in place, and even though it may help the retailers, oftentimes that additional cost then is redirected towards the consumers. Retailers don't necessarily reduce their prices because they're paying less for these electronic services, which offer them a number of very good benefits, guaranteed payment, immediate payment, and the ability for their customers to conduct transactions really anywhere. Mm-hmm. And our industry has invested a great deal of money and resources into this payment system. It's one we all kind of take for granted now, but there is a cost for ongoing maintenance of that particular system. And so we would hope that we would see fair price recommendations come out of the Federal Reserve when it comes to setting prices for
and so that,
electronic
that,
payments.
That has yet to be determined, though.
Yeah, you know, Ben, there's a lot of this that is yet to be determined. A lot of the bill now goes, there are 10 different regulatory agencies now that will issue, go through the rulemaking process, and that process is the next step, and we'll have a lot to say on how the legislation will impact our communities here in Iowa, and not just our financial institutions. We think it'll have a significant impact on Iowans, both consumers and businesses.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned we talked about debit cards and the fees for credit cards and debit cards. Are you saying that in Iowa we really didn't have the sort of abuse that seems to have triggered these new regulations?
Well, in this case, I mean, there's really a lot going on in the setting of prices area, and Congress passed a bill earlier that had a lot to do with what banks or what credit card companies can and can't do in offering credit cards and put new restrictions in place there. Those apply across the board to anybody who issues credit cards. Now, all the regulatory reform bill, the Dodd-Frank bill, will do in regards to the card payment network is the Federal Reserve will now actually be setting the fee that the retailer pays the card-issuing bank every time they conduct a transaction. There was concern from the retailer's perspective that they wanted to reduce this cost area for their business. And they were successful in getting a provision included that would bring federal price controls into this area. Again, our concern is those costs then will likely be absorbed by the consumer in the way of account maintenance fees or other things that the consumer has not had to face in the past.
John Sorensen joining us for the remainder of the hour, President and CEO of the Iowa Bankers Association. If you'd like to join our conversation, join us with a question or comment about how the new financial regulations will affect you, perhaps as a consumer, as a user of one of Iowa's, 378 banks. Isn't that right, John?
That's right, Ben. Iowa has a good deal of competition when it comes to financial services and banks and a number of other different types of providers. And that, you know, that's one of the benefits we kind of neglect. You know, the marketplace still does work, and in my view, still presents the best opportunity to get the best product at the best price for consumers. And, you know, we've talked a lot about consumer protection relative to this bill. You know, that's really our business. The banking business is all about trust.
I want to get that number out there so the listeners can call in with any questions or comments. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Now, we mentioned Iowa has 378 banks, I believe less than $10 billion in assets when you combine all of the assets of all of Iowa's banks. This is, well, let's say it, puny compared to what one of these financial banks has in terms of assets, isn't it, John?
Well, certainly relative. When you look at the banks chartered in Iowa, Ben, we have about $55 billion in assets statewide. Relative to the larger institutions, there's quite a difference. You know, we have about 8,000 banks in the country, and the four largest do control a good share of the deposits, especially with some of the consolidations we saw in and around the financial crisis. But, you know, community banks have a very unique relationship with their community, and they have been very successful because of the relationships they develop locally. They have been a key source of credit for businesses, which is very important as we try and reignite the economy here going forward. So there will always be a place for community banks, even though, you know, at the top end of the scale, we are seeing some consolidation. And, you know, that's one of the things that the Iowa Bankers Association is all about, and creating an environment where all banks can thrive and be successful, and that customers have options here in our state.
Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, based in West Des Moines, is, I understand, the nation's largest mortgage producer, originating over $400 billion in home loans last year. How will this new law change the regulation of mortgages?
Well, there are provisions extensive provisions about mortgage underwriting. There is also a provision that requires what we refer to as skin in the game, that some institution that originates a mortgage loan that might sell that into the secondary market would retain some credit risk. And you know, that's designed to make sure that that underwriting initially is appropriate. And obviously we saw during the financial crisis some loans that originated that a lot of, without income verification and other things that should have happened, again, most of those taking place through outside of the regulated banking industry. And so this is designed to do that or to address that concern. At the same time, there is a safe harbor for, I think, most of the loans our banks in our state make, which are typically 15, 30-year fixed rate, some adjustable rate, but well underwritten and fit the secondary underwriting requirements. And we believe that once the regulatory process is complete, most of those loans will fall into a safe harbor and not require that retention risk.
Mm-hmm. So in plain English, to someone seeking a mortgage for a new house or to refinance a house, the mortgage will change how getting that mortgage?
Yeah, well, I don't think the process will change dramatically, although we are seeing some additional regulations in that area that is making it a little more complicated for our consumers, and we're trying to work with them as best we can to make the process as least cumbersome as possible. And I think the market has reacted to some degree that I think our borrowers will need to be sure that they have the appropriate down payment and verify their income and truly qualify. It's in our best interest as lenders to make sure that our customers are able to service the debt that they have. And we've always done that in our state.
Mm-hmm. Was it ever the case
kind of that additional requirements that we don't see it necessarily changing the environment in Iowa dramatically?
Was it ever the case before this financial crisis came down upon us that any of Iowa's banks were giving mortgages to people who didn't even have jobs?
No, I don't think that.
As
that
was the case in other parts of the country.
State. It certainly didn't through our banks. There were some, at one time, we saw a large increase in the number of mortgage brokers that operated in Iowa, and our state addressed that actually by bringing them under additional regulation and requiring having them be licensed and have a bonding requirement. So, I think there are steps being taken to make sure that those lenders and loan originators are following similar guidelines as our regulated banks are.
Join our conversation with John Sorensen, President and CEO of the Iowa Bankers Association, in our remainder of our hour, 1-866-780-9100, or the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Jim in Cedar Rapids writes, the former CEO at Merrill Lynch calls the reform taking banks back to the 1970s. Jim writes, does this mean a simpler way of banks doing business? Everything I see, writes Jim, indicates more red tape for consumers. He'd like a comment from you, John Sorensen.
Well, we are definitely concerned about the red tape that this creates. Anytime you have greater government intervention into private industry, there's going to be record keeping required in order to document procedures at your institution. So, one of the goals I know of this new consumer agency is to try to simplify disclosures. Our industry will be trying to work very closely with them to adequately do that so our customers can fully understand the mortgage contract or whatever it is they are signing. In addition, we've made a real effort to do more financial literacy efforts to help educate our customers and our communities generally, and especially in our high schools, so that we have consumers better prepared to make good, solid financial decisions, because that's in our best interest as well.
As you mentioned earlier in our conversation, a lot of the details in this new Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act have yet to be determined, to worked out. At this point, John Sorensen, what are the first steps you are taking and banks in Iowa are taking in light of the signing into law tomorrow of the new legislation?
Well, right now, Ben, it's very much an education process. We're trying to make sure that our members do fully understand what is included in the legislation, the timetable for the regulatory pronouncements to follow, how that would impact their operations going forward. And so it is, you know, this is a 2,000-page bill. There's nothing simple about it, and it has a lot of very unique provisions. But I can tell you, most of our banks will operate as normal. I mean, I think our customers are not going to see an appreciable change in the way we operate. It will just require probably an additional burden on the part of bank staff to comply with some of the procedures.
I think this email from Joyce in Ames echoes what you mentioned. She writes, doesn't the new bill present the Iowa Banking Association with a wonderful opportunity to offer continuing education opportunities to community banks around the state who will need to be learning the new rules and changes?
Exactly. That's one of the roles of a trade association, and that's what we do for our members here, provide educational opportunities and training on an ongoing basis. And a lot of that is proactive training on how we can not only, you know, absorb new legislation, but we do it ongoing to make sure that they have the best ideas and how they can provide the best quality products and the right financial advice for their consumers. You know, all industries do that, and we like to think that we do a good job of supporting our banks.
I've read that another impact of these new financial laws and regulations could be reductions or new standards for credit card rewards programs. Many of us have these new or higher fees for bank accounts. For those of us with these rewards programs, what changes might we see?
Well, yeah, and those are, you know, I think we've seen from Congress really kind of an effort to maybe change the way banks price some of their products and services. And a lot of those don't necessarily relate just to regulatory reform, but the Credit Card Act that passed earlier, and then many Iowa consumers would have heard from their financial institution recently about opting in to their overdraft protection programs if they so desire. And we're finding most Iowans do appreciate that service and have opted in through their financial institution to retain that protection should they overdraw their accounts. But I think Congress has stepped in many respects and not allowed banks to individual price. In other words, if you manage your checking account or your whatever financial products and services in a responsible way, you oftentimes don't absorb a lot of the fees that are designed to discourage not doing so. And because of some restrictions put in place in a number of different areas related to checking accounts or their card usage or credit card, I think we probably will be seeing more general account maintenance fees that will be standard for all financial consumers as opposed to the individual pricing that we, I think, used to practice as an industry.
Many consumers are confused by the difference between brokers and investment advisors, and I understand this law will require the Securities and Exchange Commission to study the issue in the next few months and give the SEC authority to require financial advisors to have the same level of responsibility to their clients. John Sorensen, can you comment and tell us? I wouldn't know the difference. What's the difference between a broker and an investment advisor? What are we correcting here?
Well, you know, first of all, Ben, let me say that I'm a commercial banker. I'm not on the investment banking side of the equation, so that's not an issue we engaged in. So I would probably defer to an investment advisor about defining the difference there and what change that this bill might impact in that regard.
What about the claim that many have of this bill that it does not address the problematic nature of the modern executive and professional compensation, these large fees that are paid to professionals in the business, that it didn't get regulated in this law, does it?
Well, there are some compensation provisions in the law. One does require a shareholder vote on executive compensation. It also requires regulators to review and examine incentive compensation plans to make sure that those incentives are appropriate to the health of the financial institution and that you aren't, you know, incenting any kind of bad behavior in any way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, those are things that most good managers are going to make sure it doesn't happen anyway, but this, again, does have some compensation restrictions in the bill that will impact a number of different institutions.
I understand the law allows consumers to access a free copy of their credit report and credit score if they learn of a, quote, adverse action, such as being denied a loan resulting in a higher interest rate based on their credit profile. What changes will be brought here in terms of a credit score, a credit report?
Well, I don't know that there are necessarily any specific, and again, this is a 2,000-page bill, Ben, so I must admit I've not read every page, but there is already a provision in place that allows consumers to get a copy of their credit report, which was a prior law that was passed that now gives them that opportunity and has made put in place a more effective mechanism, I believe, for making changes to that report when needed.
We have just about a minute left. I'd like you to look into your crystal ball as the Iowa Bankers Association president and CEO, and if we look down the road 3, 5, 10 years, ultimately, how will this change the way we interact with banks and how banks operate, do you believe, if you had to guess now?
Well, one of the things, one of our big priorities as we worked through this bill, Ben, was to make sure our community banking model can continue to operate, because we think that close relationship locally with your consumer is very important to assuring that you're offering effective products and services that are in the best long-term interests of your customer, and you're in the business for the benefit of your community. And so many of our banks in Iowa operate that way, and we were trying to protect it. One of the biggest threats, frankly, to that ongoing model is increased regulatory burden, which, as you know, the smallest institution, it always falls most heavily on the smallest institution because they don't have the staff of attorneys to address it as easily as the larger banks.
Okay,
so
John.
From my standpoint, that's the biggest threat. That said, there are always opportunities, and our banks will be out there looking for those, and I can guarantee you there'll be some great competition in trying to serve Iowans going forward.
John Sorensen, thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you, Ben.
President and CEO of the Iowa Bankers Association joining us live this afternoon. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.